Okay, this is Karen Brewster. Today is September 30th, 2017, and I'm here at the Veterans and Pioneer Home in Palmer, Alaska, with Claude Edward File Jr., who goes by the name of Bud.
Right.
And we're also joined by his beautiful cat, Beamer.
Yeah, right.
Who may be purring in the background. So, Bud, thank you for talking to me today about your life and memories of the early days in Alaska. So, to get us started, I know you told me you're 93.
Yeah.
So, where were you born?
We're in Illinois. Elmwood, Illinois. That's in Peoria County.
Okay.
I left there when I was 14 years old with my folks. I've never been back. Never had any desire to go back there.
And what was your growing up like there in Illinois?
Well, my first memories was we lived on a farm. And Dad was renting a farm. And then he had a bad crop failure. So he got a job at Caterpillar. And so he moved to Peoria, where he lived on the outskirts of Peoria. It was in town, but
yeah.
there's woods behind us. Anyhow, so then we lived there. For a couple of years, anyhow, and then that's when the big depression started.
Mm.
So he got laid off. Then he went to work in coal mines, And I was from a very large family.
So how many brothers and sisters do you have?
12 of us.
Oh, my goodness.
Four girls and 8 boys. And there's one sister, and then I got 2 brothers left.
And where do you fall in the order?
I was 5th.
Okay.
Well, I was 6th, but there was one brother. He was 2 steps ahead of me. He died of diphtheria.
Oh, okay.
And so I never knew him. But then my oldest sister, oldest brother, a sister, a brother, and a sister was older than me.
Okay.
And then twins was after me, twin
wow.
boys. And then my sister Amy, she's the one still living. And then brother Tom, he lives in Juneau. Brother Bob, he lives in Juneau. Fred, he passed away about 10 years ago. He lives in Petersburg and has family there. And then Jack, he passed away many years ago. He fell in an iron worker and he fell.
Oh, dear.
So he has family down in the Puget Sound area.
Uh-huh.
And so that's about what family I have left.
And so after your father...
Oh, and my brother Jim.
Oh.
See, he's a twin.
Oh.
And he lives... He has a lot of family in Fairbanks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's right. And he passed away about 15 years ago, I think. I don't remember.
So during the Depression, your father lost his job with Caterpillar?
Yeah. Yeah, and he worked in the mines. He made good money working in the mines because he was very strong and a hard worker. But we always were poor because we had some
yeah.
family. Yeah, but we were all taught to work, and that's what I'm really proud of.
Mm-hmm. And you said there were woods behind in Peoria. Did you
well,
grow
it's
up?
Just those. I know there's there's a berry field.
Mm-hmm.
Behind there, and but it wasn't really much woods.
I didn't know if you grew up going out and hunting and trapping little animals
well,
and things like that on the farm.
We didn't anything like that down in Washington.
Okay.
But I always liked to be out in the woods.
Yeah.
And
so the coal mining your father did, that wasn't Illinois, was it?
Yeah, that was
Illinois.
Yeah, that's in Illinois. And then we moved to. When I was 14, my 14th birthday, we left Illinois. We didn't know it until we got to across the Mississippi River. But anyhow, and then we visited there with my grandparents for a few days, and then we headed west. And that was a blast for us kids. We camped out at night, and there's a lot of people camping out along the road in those days.
Oh, yeah.
And one outstanding campground was in Idaho. Stopped at a filling station, asked the place where we camped. The guy said, up to Soda Springs. So we went up there, and here is 10 miles off the highway. I don't think there's a residence in all that distance. We got up there, grass about that deep around the spring, and the sign says, no camping, so we camped.
So it was like 3 or 4 feet of grass, and you just...
Well, about 2 or 3
okay.
feet. Yeah, anyhow, that was really nice, and we had it all to ourselves. And then we got to Washington. Well, then we had 2 cars and a trailer Dad had built. We had the 36 Dodge car, and it was that was in 1938 when we left Illinois. Mm-hmm. Then he had I think it's a 28 Chevrolet, an older car, and so he drove that. My oldest brother, he was 19 then. He drove the Dodge with the trailer behind it. Mm-hmm. And anyhow, and then at night, we'd park the 2 cars and stretch a rope between them and had a tarp that's 24 feet by 16 feet. It had it on the ground and up over the rope. Mm-hmm. And we slept there like sardines. Anyhow, once we did stop, I think it was Rock Springs. Dad was, had a coal mine there, he thought maybe he'd get work there. So they went and rented, what do we call them, is it tourist
like those little
camps, I think they call them.
Tourist cabins.
But then it was just small cabins rented. And so they rented one of them, and him and Mom and the girls, they lived in that, and us boys camped out. And then we were going there getting showers, and the owner found out about it, and he kicked us out.
Oh, no.
So we were all camping out.
Yeah.
So I don't know, we were there a week or so, and then we went on to Washington. And I'd always wanted to live around mountains. You know, we didn't see him. Going over this great divide, that's just low hills, you know. and so we got to, well, we could see Pike's Peak.
Oh, yeah.
At a distance. And we got to Washington and the Cascades. I went, this is just like what I thought mountains were like. And so there's picnic grounds there, but we got to camp there. There's a fringe of woods on one edge of the property, and we put up our camp there. And then they sold a Dodge to get money enough, and then Dad started building a boat. And I don't think he'd even been as much of a rowboat in his life, but he went to the library and studied up on boat building. So he started building this boat, and it was, we run out of money. So then we went to down to Puyallup. That was at Renton, where he was building the boat. And that campground, that was great. There's a Cedar River run by there, and there's clear water, and we never had clear water in Illinois. And we swam there and built a raft and rafted down to Renton. But then when we ran out of money and had to go, we went down to Puyallup Valley, and then went blackberry picking, and I didn't like that, but we had to do it, make a living. Dad and us kids all picking berries.
You picked and then got paid for how much you picked.
Yeah, it's a commercial operation. There was a lot of berry fields there at that time. Yeah, that was, that was, let's see, I, I like that Puget Sound area. There's a lot of woods there.
Yeah. Do you know why your father decided to go to Washington?
Well, we were headed for Alaska.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, the start of Alaska. This is about 2 years before he left Illinois. There was a young couple that had hiked from the end of the road in British Columbia over into the Yukon. And then they've written books about it. I haven't seen one of their books for years. But they come to the local church there and give a talk on Alaska.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy. When we went home that night, we were just wild to go to Alaska. Yeah, one of the things, you know, we talked about so much and got all the books we could on Alaska. And I had a laugh. My youngest brother, he was 3 years old, he got mad about something. He was walking down into the cow pasture. And I said, "Hey, Jack, where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to Alaska." He's just 3 years old.
Just 3 years old.
And anyhow, yeah. But anyhow, there in Washington, of course, we were broke, you know, and so we went to work in the berry fields. And
did your father think he was bringing you all to Alaska? He thought he could find work in Alaska?
Well, there's homesteading. There's, you know, when the Matanuska
okay, homestead, the
they had Collins there. And he didn't qualify because we weren't destitute and he wasn't farming at the time. So we never got in on that. But we heard this talk in the church there, and we were just wild to go to Alaska.
So even your parents were wild to go?
My mother was. When I look back, Dad wasn't all that enthused about it, but he was the leader. Anyhow, we stuck there in Washington for 3 years until we built up finances enough to finish the boat, and then we headed north. Well,
why was he building a boat?
So you get to Alaska. That's the only way you got to Alaska in those days.
Oh, that's true.
You know,
the highway wasn't built.
Of course, they had commercial boats, right. But then it cost a lot of money to ride on a steamboat. And anyhow, while we was in Washington, our first winter there, we got acquainted with some people that was taking over operating a dairy. And there's two houses on it. So they invited us to live in one of the houses. And so we spent the winter there. That was a dandy place. I liked that. It drove up through another farm, and then there's a little valley there that this farm is located. But that's nice. But then that fall, my oldest brother and my dad too. Well, my oldest brother and I, while we was picking blackberries there, I guess it was in August. Anyhow, him and I went east of the mountains to get into the apple picking. I was 14, he was 19. And so he'd already been over there with another guy for a short time. And so he had a job picking apples lined up. But got over there, our home was a barn door for lean-do, and so we slept in that and had a campfire out in front, and we cooked in front of it. And later on, my dad come out, and he brought a gas camp stove.
Oh.
So, but then by that time, my brother and I, we picked hops there, and I think he'd make about $2 a day, and I'd make about $1 a day. And we saved up enough money to buy a tent, 8x10 tent. If I remember right, it was $14.
Wow.
Something like that now costs hundreds of dollars.
Right.
And anyhow.
But back then, $14 was a lot of money.
Well, I think he's made about $2 a day, and
right.
I was making about $1 a day.
Yeah.
And so it was a couple of weeks we lived under this barn door. And then my dad come over. That's after we got the tent up. But before he got there, they hired a couple, what we call, in those days we called them hobos.
Mm.
But they come there, and they talked themselves into moving in with us and in a tent. Well, that was one of those guys was a good cook, which we'd come out. And of course, we're sharing,
right,
sharing the expenses, which that worked out. And then my dad come, but he wouldn't stay in the tent with us. He slept in his car. Anyhow, so we picked apples, and of course, my dad confiscated all my wages, which
yes.
I didn't even give it a thought, because, you know, it was, we had to have money.
Yeah, well, you
I was living it up myself.
You were earning money for the family to go to Alaska.
Yeah, that's the way it was.
Yeah.
And so we went through the apple season there, and then that winter, I was 14, and I just got through the eighth grade, and I just hated school, so I didn't have to go to school because I could, we cut firewood. That was the bottom of the labor, you know, you cut firewood.
Oh, yeah.
You were the very bottom of the labor, so forth. And my oldest brother, he got a job in a dairy. If he'd get his room and board and $3.50 a week. And he was still giving us money to help to live. My dad and I, we sawed wood by hand, and just barely. I didn't realize he had a hernia.
Oh, man.
And so we weren't producing very much on that. And then that spring we moved back down in the Puyallup Valley to pick berries. And we got acquainted some real nice people there that we picked raspberries in the early summer, and then in the later summer we picked blackberries. Through that, we got acquainted with some people that had a raspberry farm that they wanted to share crop.
Oh.
So we did that. Then my dad, he went to the hospital to have his hernia taken care of. So the twins and I, we did all that work on the training the berry bushes, mm-hmm, and stuff, which was good work, you know. Well, of course, we were just building up for the next year because we weren't getting any money.
Right.
But that was nice, and the twins, they were out of, had gone through 1 year of grade school in Washington, and then they dropped out. So then the three of us was doing this work on the dairy, on the berry farm.
Yeah, I was wondering about how much time you were able to go to school.
I didn't go at all. Well, my brothers didn't either. The twins, they didn't go. Just went through the eighth grade. And my sister, younger sister, was visiting me here several years ago, and she was apologizing. Says didn't know how she didn't has gotten to thinking over the years how us boys, we were worked all the years that we were high school age, mm-hmm, and the girls, they went
to school.
Yeah, because they didn't have no work for them.
Right. Well, as I say, all that farm work, and that's hard work, and you didn't have time to go to school. You said you didn't really like school anyway.
I was glad to be working rather than going to school.
Why didn't you like school?
Huh?
Why did you not like school?
Well, I was a poor student, for one thing. And that I just didn't like being pinned up in the school. In springtime come, I just look out the window.
You wanted to be outside.
Yeah. And so anyhow, finished the boat up and got it launched, and but a trailer truck went and hauled it down to Tacoma, put it in the water, and then we come to Alaska.
What did he do about an engine for that boat?
For the engine?
Yeah.
Dad bought an old car for the engine in it.
Oh.
So he put, people did that quite a bit in those
days,
put car engines in boats. Oh. And of course, he got more power than he needed for that size boat. It was only 30 feet long. And by that time, my oldest brother had gone into the Army. So there were just 10 of us kids, and Mom and Dad.
Just 10?
Yeah, just 10. Well, five of us boys, I know, slept on deck with a tarp over us. Mm. And it was no hardship. It was an adventure to us kids. I mean, I was reading some reminiscings of my mother. she didn't enjoy the trip very much. I think every one of us kids just thought it was a big adventure. And anyhow, we broke down the thrust bearing on the propeller shaft, burnt out, and so we had to tow the boat ashore, put it and beached it. And none of us knew how to row a boat. We had a rowboat with us, a skiff, and we camped on the beach there while Dad was working on the propeller shaft. And while we was there, I went and broke my first game law. I shot a couple of deer, and my mother and sisters, they cooked, they canned it. I don't, we had jars and stuff with us, so they went and canned it over a campfire. Anyhow, Dad got the propeller shaft fixed, and as tide was coming in, we was loading stuff in the boat, and then he went and started the engine up, and it caught fire. So I know I was down inside. I was throwing stuff out of the skylight, and some of the kids were out there wading around the water. And the Dad got the fire out, but then the wiring and stuff was burnt on the engine, so there we were stuck. And so we had a choice, either Petersburg or Wrangell, about equal distance from where we were. Well, we chose Petersburg because it was on the, well, I don't know why we chose Petersburg, but it was closer to the interior, yeah, to the homestead land. So anyhow, so we started out rowing. Dad and me rowing with two oars, and then the twins were paddling. and my sister Virginia, she was the oldest one with us then. See, my oldest sister, she stayed in Missouri to teach school. My oldest brother joined the Army. So anyhow, here we were paddling and rowing and stuff, and none of us knew how to do any of it. And my sister was steering the boat. Well, of course, we didn't have enough headway that the steering made any difference. She had no control of it. My Dad thought she should have, and he's always yelling orders to her. And finally, we got to the mouth, about halfway across Sumner Strait. Here come a boat from Petersburg. And they turned around and towed us to the mouth of the Wrangell Narrows.
Oh, nice.
And so we started rowing again. Here a fishing boat comes along. Oh, it's lucky they did, because Wrangell Narrows is a treacherous place. And they took us in tow and towed us into town. So I got up early the next morning and walked through town and went past the shipyard. And I thought, oh, I'd try to get a job there. But I was so shy, I just walked back and forth, trying to get up courage enough to ask. I went in, there's this old Norwegian running it. And I said, well, I don't know anything about this kind of work, but I want to learn it. That's just fine, that's just fine. So he put me to work.
And you were, what, 16?
I was 17 by
17.
Then. Yeah, I was 17. Yeah. So he put me to work ripping old corking out of the seams of a scow there. And I worked hard. And then news started filtering through town. This big family had showed up there on a boat. So he said, what's your Dad doing? And I said, well, he's been doing carpenter work. He had been working at Fort Lewis. As a carpenter, that's when it started booming, preparing for the war.
Right.
So, and he said, well, tell him to come and go to work. I said, well, he's just a boat carpenter. Oh, no, he's a house carpenter. That's just fine, And he put it, and so he is just starting the sailing season, and his crew had all quit.
No.
So to go fishing. So Dad went to work with me the next morning and had the twins with us. He was darned if he didn't hire the twins too.
Nice.
And so We rented a house there, a big house, the biggest house we'd ever lived in. First house I ever lived in that had a flush toilet in it.
Wow.
Or running water, period.
Yeah. This was, what, 1941?
How's that?
What year was this?
Oh, 1941.
Yeah.
And anyhow, so here, first thing, you know, well, of course, Dad and the twins and I, we had a job, and my two sisters, Betty and Virginia, they're older than me, they got jobs. I remember my old sister, she got a job doing some sewing for someone. And she had sewn all of her clothes since she was 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And she was 4 years old. She's 4 years and one day older than me. So anyhow, and people laugh about it. Years later, here has been a tough winter. Now the family come to town there and they all got to work just right away.
Right.
And anyhow, and of course, see, that's a Norwegian town.
Right.
And at that time, you go down the street and you hear people speaking Norwegian. And of course, my brothers and, well, let's see, four youngest boys, they were blonde. I had been blonde, but my hair was turning a little darker. And then the twins, now one of them was blonde, but his hair turned dark. But the other one, he was dark-haired and brown-eyed. But they thought we were Norwegian, so
yeah.
So so we fell right in to the town. And that guy who's running the shipyard, he's always smelled of booze, you know, he always put his arm around me, you know, buddy this. And I know he wasn't a homosexual, but he just, that's just his way it was. But
he thought of you like a son.
Yeah, but I resent it. You know, I would shoulder him off, you know, when he'd do that. So I know it made him mad. Because then one day he says, he had me painting on a skull, and then later on he says, put the chalk line up, and says, he told me to paint up to a seam.
Mm-hmm.
And then he put a chalk line there and said, paint up to the chalk line. And then he come back, what the hell are you doing up there? I said, well, you told me to. And he said he didn't. Well, he had told me. But he was drinking all the time.
Yeah.
But so he canned me. And so I was glad to go. Well, I told him I was really heartbroken that I'd been canned from the job. So I went down on the float looking for a job fishing. And I was pointing to a boat that is belonged to Libby Cannery, that's Craig, in Southeast Alaska. And they're going around collecting crew members. See, the cannery had boats of their own, and they were going around collecting crew members. So I got one there, and was picking guys up along the way. So we got to Craig, of course, I went around, everyone's getting ready to fish, or I asked for job fishing, and it's nearly all Indians was running. I think they had half a dozen or a dozen boats of their own. And I know there's one boat was run by a white guy. And I didn't know him at the time, but he was a Petersburg guy. But anyhow, said, no, we don't have him. But, oh, we'll try young Joseph's son there. He may be looking for a crew. So this is an Indian. And so I went and checked with him, and he was pretty nearly drunk at the time. And of course, his first year running the boat, so he's having a hard time getting a crew. So he hired me as cook. Well, I said, I can't cook. Well, you'll learn. Well, so we started out.
Now, the boats that were being run by the Indians, were they Libby Cannery boats? Or
they were cannery boats. They belonged to the cannery. And see, there, and I say, there's half a dozen there. There were quite a few boats.
Right.
And all of them were run by Indian crews.
Right, but they were hired by the cannery to run those boats.
Yeah.
And so all the fish went to that cannery.
Yeah, right. And anyhow, so
the guy hired
me, and he said, so I moved, I had blankets and sea bag with me and moved onto the boat. And he says, you got any money? And I said, no. Well, he took out 35 cents and told me to go up to the restaurant and get a meal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, well, that was nice. But I did have some money, but I said I didn't.
Yes.
So then it was there a few days getting ready to go. And then the rest of the crew, let's see, there's supposed to be a five-man crew, but there's two other guys. And then they had to wait a week for the fourth guy to get out of jail. So we went out shorthanded. And
what were you fishing for?
Salmon.
With a seine boat?
Yeah, it was a seine boat.
Okay.
Yeah, the seine boat. And of course, ice completely green. And so we made the first set we made. See, they dropped the seine over the stern of the boat, and there'd be a skiff holding the back end, and then it'd circle around. And then they'd purse up the bottom. It'd be hard to explain, but anyhow, and then they haul the seine in.
It closes in.
Yeah, it closes in, yeah.
And then you kind of get like a big bag of fish that comes out of the water, right?
Yeah. But anyhow, you had to pull all the seine in except the end there, and or made a pocket.
Right.
So I was supposed to pull a web, and then one big guy, there was two of us on the web, and then one guy on the cork line, the skipper, he was on the lead line, pulling that in. Well, they just went like this, you know, and so I was doing the same way. Got about halfway through, my arms just went limp. Oh, and the skipper's yelling at, Bud, take up the slack, take up the slack. And I was just limp.
Pulling so hard.
Yeah. We got that set made. I don't think we caught hardly any fish anyhow. It was just more or less a test. And of course, the rest of the crew was looking at me like, what have we got here? You know, they played out halfway through the scene. And so then the next set we made, I think only made one set that day. Next set, same thing, boy, I'm not going to do it. I did say about halfway through, I pooped out. Oh boy, was I embarrassed. And I know these guys thought, what have we got here? But then, after that, we made more sets, you know, and I got so work whole.
Your arms got stronger. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second week we went out, then the guys out of jail, that was made a complete crew, but they didn't care much for my cooking.
Oh.
so there's an older guy there, deaf guy, Indian. And he took over the cooking, and he was a good cook. I was still the dishwasher, which I preferred that I was anyhow. I wasn't too sure how clean they were. And so we excuse me.
Do you need some water?
Yeah.
Should we take a pause?
I should take it. Anyhow.
Okay, wait. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're fishing. They didn't like your cooking. Some old guy, the other guy took over?
Yeah, he took over the cooking. And that was dandy with me. I didn't like cooking anyhow, but I tried. But I didn't know anything about it. But I was still a dishwasher. And as the season went on, I got stronger. And there's one of the crew was 2 years older than me. And at first he kind of rode me, you know, because I was green.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't have pilot house controls on the boat. They just had bells.
Oh.
And they had a guy, they called him an engineer. He was down in the engine room, and then ding, 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 or he'd slow the engine down and chunk, chunk, or, you know, something. But he was supposed to put it in reverse. And, and as they had it worked out good, you know.
They had a system.
But it just needed an extra man. But this kid that's 2 years older than me, he was an engineer. So when we went to make a set, and he's supposed to go down the engine room, he's smoking all the time, and he'd say, hold my cigarette. You know, well, after a while, that as I got to be a better hand, then the skipper starts saying, "Why can't you do that? Bud can do it." You know, and of course that kid started resenting me.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyhow, when it was in port, of course they'd be all uptown celebrating, and I'd just go to bed at a regular time and go to sleep. But then he come down, and he called me Cookie. I still made coffee.
Okay.
Cookie couldn't get up and make some coffee. And so I said, "The next time you shake me awake like that, I'm going to slug you." And so he didn't give much thought. So I was in town, and I was sleeping. All of a sudden, Cookie, get up and make coffee. So I slugged him. Well, he had an older brother on another boat. And they were alone that time. They were just the two of them. And the galley was on deck. And they said, then he goes up in the galley. "Oh, he hit me. He hit me, you know." And they said, "Come on up here and fight like a man." Well, there's two of them. So I thought, I'm a white man. So I started up the companionway, and they both jumped on me, stuffed me back down into the forecastle. Well, it was the engine room, then the forecastle. So then there's up there yelling at me, "Come up and fight like a man." I thought, well, I tried, but you just pushed me back down. So I thought, well, I'll go up the skylight. So I go up the skylight, and then I'll go around. I'll meet them at the door one at a time. So I made a little bit of noise, and one of them said, "Well, he's going up the front way." And then one of them said, "You go that way, and I'll go this way." So I got out of that town. I started around the pilot house, and I met my shipmate. And I grabbed hold of him, and I just about threw him overboard. And I thought, no, he might get hurt. Well, that was a big mistake, because then his brother landed on my back. And we were rolling around there, and ended up, I had my legs scissors on my shipmate around his hips, and his brother, I had him around the chest. And we were just laying there, you know, struggling away. And then one of the crew members had to wait for him to get out of jail. He was an uncle of these, but he come down, but he broke the fight up. And then they went uptown, and so did their uncle. And then pretty soon, I goes back to bed, and I pretty soon hear this yelling. And I goes out, and here's a whole bunch of teenage Indians up on the dock, boys and girls, yelling, "Come up here, you yellow son of a bitch! You yellow white son of a bitch! Come up and fight like a man!" I thought I'd showed pretty good, you know, against two guys. And I didn't go up, but they were yelling at me all the time. But there's had an iron bar about that long that they cranked the engine with. They had a big flywheel. Anyhow, they called it a Johnson bar, and they put in a hole in the flywheel and crank the engine and take off. And anyhow, I'd taken that to bed with me after they'd gone uptown. And then I was laying there, you know, and think, should I go up there and with this, the Johnson bar and chase them away? I thought, no, if they stayed, I sure didn't want to hit them with that iron bar, so I didn't go. And then the next day, the skipper come down. I told him we'd had a fight, and he said, "Oh, that was we'll still work it out." So we did. And
was that in Craig?
That's that.
Was the port you stopped in, was that Craig?
Yeah, it's Craig. Yeah, that's Craig. Yeah, and so.
Yeah, I was wondering about how the natives and the non-natives got along back then.
Pretty good, unless they're outnumbered ones outside. Because, see, in Petersburg, see, there's, like I said, a Norwegian town, but there's quite a bit of Indians there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the kids in school, I guess, never associated very much. I went in the army. Then I got acquainted. My outfit was mostly Indians and Eskimos, anyhow. So I got to think, well, hey, they're just human beings like
right.
we are.
But yeah. So on the boat, eventually you guys worked it out.
Oh yeah.
Were you the only white guy on the boat?
Yeah, I was the only white guy there, and I kind of think though the Indians they liked having a white guy. I think they saw a white guy as good luck.
Oh.
Now maybe I'm just imagining that. But anyhow, but the skipper, he was real nice to me. And this uncle that had been in jail, he was real nice to me. And this old this guy that took over cooking, he was real nice to me. So I got a real good impression of the Tlingit Indians.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned how, you know, they'd come to town, come to port and go uptown, you know, to celebrate.
Yeah.
Go to the bars or whatever, maybe.
How's that?
Did they go to the bars?
Yeah, well, that's, well of course they did.
Well, did you go?
No. I was only 17 years old, and my mother trained us kids not to, do things like that.
So you didn't drink?
No, I didn't drink at all.
Okay.
Another 5 years I started drinking when I was in the Army, but then it didn't take me long to realize it was a waste of time, too.
Okay. So how did you get the nickname Bud?
I don't know. That's what I was always called, Bud.
Oh, why? Your family called
yeah,
you that?
Yeah, that's called that old. I didn't know I had. It was Claude Edwards.
Well, was Claude Edward your father?
That's his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he went by Claude?
Yeah, in Illinois he went by the name Bill. He didn't like the name Claude. I found out later on he didn't like the name Claude. And so he went, but everyone called him Bill. But, yeah. And the dad, he didn't smoke or drink either.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know he'd have a beer once in a while, but he didn't smoke. And I never learned to smoke. I never did like to be in a place where people smoked.
Yeah.
And in the Army, it was really hard because we'd have class in the wintertime. I was in basic training, and we did a lot of classwork. And there'd just be a blue haze in the smoking.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I had a bad cold all the time. I was in basic training, which I blamed on the smoke.
Yeah.
And of 80 some men in our class, I think I can only think of three of us that didn't smoke.
Wow.
And everyone smoking it. But now they can't smoke.
I
don't think they could smoke in places like that now.
Well, they can't.
And
I would like to ask you about your mother, what she was like.
She was
to come all the way to Alaska with all those kids.
Yeah. It was 12 kids. She had to spread her affection with 12 kids. So we didn't get the attention that most kids did. But then we were all one group, which I would have missed if it was just one or two of us. Because, you have to be raised up different than when there's just one or two kids. And so, but my mother was quite religious, and she was a strong physically and very strong mentally. And my favorite story about her is my oldest brother and neighbor boy, they were shooting at a marble on a fence post. And she come out, and all of us stand around, and my brother said, "Hey, Mom, you want to shoot that marble?" And she hadn't shot a gun in 15 years, I don't think. She raised up and bang, busted the marble.
Wow.
and here my brother and his friend, they was missing it all the time. They put another marble up there, but she wouldn't shoot again. So I like to tell that one.
That's a good one. So what was her growing up?
She raised on a farm in Illinois.
Okay.
Both of my folks were raised on farms.
Yeah, so she had learned to shoot as a young woman?
But just, she had never, she's raised in the house, I don't think had a gun in the house.
Oh.
But then my dad, he was a real gun nut, and he was a real good shot. And so she learned to use a gun, but then after his kids started going, I don't think she shot any. But I remember she mentioned squirrel hunting a lot with dad when they was first married.
And then did your dad teach you and your brothers to shoot and hunting? You would go hunting? You mentioned hunting.
Well, see, in Illinois, they only had rabbits and squirrels, the only thing they hunted in our area. And I didn't have, I left there when I was 14. I never had a gun. My oldest brother, he had a single shot, 22, we shot some. But I don't ever remember me ever killing any animals.
But you killed those deer in Southeast.
Yeah.
Were those your first animals you hunted?
I shot a legal deer down in Washington.
But that's why you had a gun on the boat, because your dad wasn't.
Yeah, the fall before we left Washington, dad had helped gone. We got a second-handed .30-30 for me, And he had a 30-06, a second-hand one he picked up somewhere over the years. But just before Christmas, I didn't know, I was at work, I was working in the parish, berry fields, but he took my rifle and his rifle, and he went to the store and traded them in on 4 30-06s for the twins and me and him. So that's what, and I had that rifle just up until a couple of years ago. I gave it to my youngest brother, or youngest son. He wanted it, and of course his son's going to get mm-hmm. it. So I know my son had been hounding me for years. He wanted that. But it's just like an arm to me, you know. I was right. So used to it. It was, I did some real good shooting with it.
Yeah, but so you learned that at a young age.
And anyhow, my dad, he trained us good, that there is never point a firearm at anyone, anything, unless you want to shoot it.
Right.
And if you just sit and have to point a gun someone, you're in trouble. And I've seen grown men be sitting there holding their gun or standing there just pointing it, just anything. And no, that was a real no-no, and I taught my sons that way too. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that is.
It sounds like, yeah, your mother must have been pretty tough to come and, you know. Your mother was pretty tough to be on that boat
set up
a household in Petersburg.
We moved in a big house and only paid $20 a month. We thought we'd be paying at least $100 a month. But see, that things were kind of stagnant there. But they'd already started up in the Anchorage area. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd started
building
stuff there. But and in Fairbanks. But anyhow.
So you fished that summer 1941 with those
yeah.
guys?
And then.
Was it a good season?
Was it?
Did you do well fishing?
Oh, boy. There was a extraordinary good year for seining. And like I say, my brothers and I, we had struck for wages down in Washington. We won 25 cents an hour, and we were happy about getting it. Some people said they couldn't afford it, but they did anyhow. But anyhow, so I went home from that fishing. I had a check for $720 in my pocket. So I give half of it to Mom. And that's more money than I'd ever had. I'd been home about 3 days, and my dad said, "What are you going to do, lay around all winter?" Well, I kind of had. he was working, the Union Oil was building a new dock. And I said, "You come, I'll get you a job down there." So I went down there I was still 17, I had Eliza at 18, so I got to work. Worked there for, I don't know, a month or two, and then it got the job done. Then I went to work in a sawmill, and the sawmill is 4 miles from home, and it got $5 a day, and it cost $1 to take a cab out there. So I was walking to work every morning, walking home. That was no problem. Walking was real easy to me.
Yeah.
But then my dad, the mill owner was building a house, so he hired Dad to work there as a carpenter. So we started taking a cab back and forth. then the mill shut down for the winter, and then the war started. War started.
1942.
Yeah, that's 41.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we'd been in. We hadn't been in Alaska. We got that summer there that
right.
summer, and then that,
so we're December 1941.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wanted to join the Marines then, and Dad wouldn't give me permission. So then we were working on a pile driver in Ketchikan, and I turned 18. I said, "I'm going to join the Marines," and I started packing my stuff, and I thought he's going to trounce me. As he's going out the door, he says, "I want to shake hands with you. I didn't think you had guts enough to stand up to me." he was he was confiscating my wages.
All right.
And anyhow, so I went to, made it to Sitka, and I went to join the Marines, and anyhow, I went to the physical, and I passed at that time, but while I was there being taken in, I see they didn't have a regular recruiting place. I was just joining the unit there. Well, anyhow, they got through, and sergeant there said, "Well, soldier," well, they didn't say soldier, "well, you're a Marine now, except we have to have your parents' permission." So I said, "Well, I have it." And they said, "Well, we want it in writing." Well, I was 6 foot tall and I only weighed 160 pounds, and I was doing hard manual labor. In fact, it was better than most men were at that time. But they said I had to have my parents' permission. So I stayed in a hotel, and I sent a telegram. That's the only way you got news around, information. And I sent my folks a telegram, and Mom and Dad were both down in Ketchikan. Mom had gone down there to stay with Dad. And so while I was waiting for an answer, I got homesick and went home. So I'm not very proud of that. But then the next winter, I was in Juneau, and I went up there and I was traveling by steerage on a steamer, and there's a whole bunch of soldiers in there. And they were hounding me why I wasn't in the Army. So when I got there, I went and enlisted, and they sent me out to a camp. There's holding us there until we formed a class. And so one day they called us out, and they called about 10 of us off to one side and said, "Well, you guys can go home. You don't pass the test." Well, a couple of them were over 40, and just then they passed a law that they weren't drafting anyone over 40. Those guys were really happy. But then there I was, all these physically unfit guys, and I thought I was the best guy there. You know, and so I said, "Well, why me?" "Well, you didn't pass the physical." So that's what they had done. I was telling you about having me do knee bends, or that part of it, and then they did find a spot on my lung. So there I was. I went back home to Petersburg, and then from there, we hired a guy to take us to Skagway, and then we were headed for the interior.
Oh, okay.
And so we were there. We camped on the edge of town there, and real nice old couples. They had a little patch of woods there, and we camped there. And they were old-time gold rush people. And then my mother and the woman, they hit off right away. And the husband, I never did see him. He's bedridden. But so anyhow, we camped there, and then Dad and I got work waiting for the steamboats to get going. And we worked a couple of weeks for a construction outfit there. And then we went when the boat started running, we took the steamer. Oh, that was great. You know, just the old paddle wheels?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they were just going, after the war, they quit using them.
So did you take the train up to
Lake
Lebar?
That was an adventure itself, yeah. You know, on that train. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that riding on that steamboat, you know, that was really great.
So that steamboat was from Whitehorse?
How's that?
From Whitehorse? Is that where the steamboat?
Yeah, it was Whitehorse. Then we spent a week in Dawson. They changed boats for some reason or other. And then we went from there to Circle City. And there on the boat, we got acquainted with some couple that lived at Central. And then, so they talked us into staying there. Ended up, my folks bought a cabin.
Okay.
There, and then Dad and I went to work for the Road Commission, and then from anyhow, I was sent to a camp at 82 Mile on the Steese Highway. You're familiar with that area.
Yeah, but what's around 82 Mile?
They had a camp there. The Road Commission had a camp.
Which side of Eagle Summit is that?
That's on the town, Fairbanks side.
So the west side.
They have Clary Summit. And then 82 Mile, and then had 12 Mile Summit, and then they had Eagle Summit.
Okay.
And anyhow, so my dad and I went to work for the road commission, and they sent me to 82 Mile.
So what did you do for the road commission?
I drove a dump truck.
You were what?
Drove a dump truck.
Dump truck, oh, okay.
They called it a Model B, and it's a one-yard dump truck. And it had a little engine in front and geared down, you know, real slow. It was easy truck to drive because you just look right out and you just practice see your front wheel, you know. but then I went to 82 Mile, they put me driving a newer truck that had big fenders and stuff on. And on a narrow road, it's kind of scary for me at first, you know. Those big fenders there, I couldn't see where the edge of the road was. But then I learned it. It worked out okay.
So but were they building the road then?
They were repairing it.
They were repairing it.
There was bulldozing out the corners, and then our job was continuously filling potholes. And there's, you know, swampy spots that had to be filled in. And so we load the truck by hand with a laborer and the foreman and me. And then go along filling potholes. And then they had on the real bad corners and stuff, there's a guy there with a D8 cat making it wider. Mm. I went and lived in the camp there when I first went to work for him at Birch Creek. They had a camp there. It's kind of interesting here. They had all these little Model Bs hauling this gravel, and we was filling in mud holes and stuff like that. And anyhow, that time there was freighting pipes for the pipeline. Let's see how it is. Well, that wasn't the pipeline.
No.
Back then they was building a gasoline line to Haines.
Oh, Haines, right.
From Haines, they built it to meet from Fairbanks.
Right.
There's hauling pipe down the river and then loading in trucks and taking it to Fairbanks.
Oh, I see.
And these truck drivers, I know they were working on piece work, and they were great big trucks, and they wouldn't give way to us little gravel loads. They just barreled, and we had to see them come. We had to duck real fast. One guy didn't get out of the road fast enough, and the pipe truck went and connected with their hind wheel and jerked it back, and they didn't have hydraulic brakes on there. There's a rod brake, and the guy that is an older man there, he was driving that truck, and they went and jumped the brake or clutch, one or the other, went and busted his ankle.
Yeah.
And anyhow, this truck driver, he was bragging to this guy that's running the cat up in the mountains, said that, boy, those little sons of bitches are going to learn to keep out of our road. So every time that cat skinner saw one of those trucks coming, he'd back out and make them stop. But anyhow, then I went to 82 Mile there. And this foreman there, he was a Yugoslavian. He still broke in English. He'd been in the country over 40 years, but he broke it. But he liked me. I was a hard worker, and he liked me. And he liked to target practice a lot. He'd been a market hunter for the railroad.
Oh, okay.
When the railroad was being built. So we did a lot of time to target practice. And, they closed down the camp there, and I went home. And then
home to Central?
Yeah, to Central. And then after that, after the first year, I went to town. My dad and I went to Fairbanks, and he got a job at some construction outfit, and I went back to work for the Road Commission. We went to a camp at 20 miles south of Fairbanks. There's a bluff there. Then there's Moose Creek. There's a creek right there. They call it Moose Creek.
Right.
Yeah, they had a camp there, and so worked there that winter. And
What did you do? Snow plowing then?
I was driving truck then.
Oh, okay.
A bunch of me and a bunch of Indians and Eskimo kids. See, they called it a home for the old and a school for the kids. And they'd have the young kids driving truck, and then the old guys, they would be working with a shovel. Most of the time, we were building a causeway to block the Tanana River, keep it from flooding Fairbanks. But I guess they have had floods since then.
Well, yeah, but that was in the 40s, 19...
In the 40s, yeah.
Yeah.
That was in 40... That was in 44. I was working there.
Yeah.
And let's see. And anyhow, they had a bunch of these Indians and Eskimos and me driving these trucks. And then they had a rock thing there. They're loading dynamite in the bluff there, and they're going to have a big explosion there. There's break up a whole bunch of rock. Well, we've been talking about it for a month. You know, they're loading all that dynamite in that hillside. And the day these other kids and I, we were always racing to see who could make the most trips to the, they had the bluff there, they had already blown out some, and they had a shovel loading the trucks. So we were always racing to see who could get the most trips. Well, I was coming back on a trip, and here two trucks were parked side by side, and they had these Eskimos and Eskimos, they had their head underneath the hood of one of the engines. So I thought they were just broke down and they blocked me off, so I couldn't get another trip ahead of them. So I just barely made it around, got around it. They were honking the horn, blowing the horn, and I just went merrily on the way. Pulls up to the loading place, and no crane there, no trucks or anything. Oh, no, just slammed her into gear and just headed out of there. And I don't know, if I'd been 10 seconds later, I would have been under the blast of the mountainside off there. Oh, I went to the other end, and there the rock gang was standing there stopping traffic there. And the foreman, he was crying. Yeah, he thought I was a goner, you know.
Oh.
But anyhow, then I got fired shortly after that. I had a chip on my shoulder, you know. I was always, so they fired me. And then they sent me back to 82 Mile. I got along good with that guy.
So you said you were on the Steese Highway, you said you were fixing the road and the potholes. And
yeah.
How much traffic was there on the road?
Oh, there wasn't hardly any traffic.
Yeah.
It just, well, that's okay. I don't need any. They tell me it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. Oh, you want to come in here? There wasn't much traffic at all on the road there.
But you still had to maintain it.
Because there were local people that lived at Central that were using it.
But enough people?
There wasn't very many people there. Well, they had the spring. Oh, yeah, they had Circle Hot Springs there. And people were going to that.
Right.
Yeah, that was where most of the traffic went. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so what was the town of Central like back then?
They had a roadhouse, and a guy sold groceries there, and gasoline. You had three prices of gasoline, local people, and Fairbanks people, and anyone out of state licensed at a higher price. Yeah, an old guy, he's a Norwegian, he walked or hobbled, bent over, and he was 84 years old, and I thought that was really ancient then. But it's a very interesting place.
Do you remember his name?
Huh?
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, it's Riley Erickson. Riley Erickson. And I don't know how long he had that place, but after I was there, but I went in the Army, I never went back there. But Yeah, that's...
Who were some of the other people?
Well, there's some people named Karsteins, Heine Karsteins. They were the ones that talked to us in living there. And they had a nice log cabin. Because, you know, there's a Y going to the Switzerland Hot Springs. They had a house. Well, the house we rented was just practically across the road from the branch off to. Mm-hmm. So, and then the Karsteins, they were on the other side of the road, just always. And then they had, then there was another house on the Circle Springs.
The road there?
Yeah, the springs. There's a house there, I remember, some people were living in. And then across the creek there, to where the roadhouse was, there was a sprinkling of buildings in there. And there's one old guy that lived there named Johnny Lake. And I went out on a trap line with him a couple of weeks. But then there's no fur there. Someone had poisoned all out. But he was a grand old guy. And I got a picture of him here.
Tell me more about him. I don't know who
Johnny
he is.
Lake.
Yeah.
All the old timers knew him. And my brothers and I, we got to know him real well. And he also worked for the road commission, but then he had these five dogs and he didn't have his own trap line, but a couple of young guys had a trap line. They went in the army and they told him to use his trap line. And, but someone had the trap line before these young guys had it. And, he poisoned out all this fur. For some reason or other, I don't know, it was more efficient poisoning the fur than it was trapping. I don't know how to do that. Yeah, it's really frowned upon, but some people did it.
Mm.
But, and Johnny Lake, he had been in the Yukon area since 1894.
Wow.
So he's there before the main gold rush.
Right.
And he's a small guy, and he's real tough, but he's a real gentleman. But I understand when he's younger, they call him Tiger Jack. he's very interesting. I was on the trap line for a couple of weeks. And
now, had he been a gold miner?
Yeah, he's a gold miner. Yeah, he'd been. Right. He said he's from Maine. He still had his Maine accent after nearly 50 years. He had his Maine accent, and he's proud of it. Mm-hmm. he claims there's two different accents in Maine, the northern part and the southern part, and he's from the northern part. And he said he could recognize a person from what part of Maine they're from.
I'm sure.
But anyhow, he's a great old guy. He's small, but he was tough. Yeah, and he was very. He come to Alaska. He figured he'd make a stake and then he'd go back and buy a farm and get married. Well, it was about 10 years before he made that much money. Then he turned around and sunk in another mine and mm-hmm. lost it all. So he said, "I've decided I'm not going to leave the country."
So when you met him in Central, was he mining in Central?
He was just ended up, he'd been working for the road commission.
Okay.
And I didn't know him when I was working for the road commission. Never had any occasion to meet him, but then he came over to visit my folks, and he asked me if I wanted to go trapping with him. I was all hot to go, but there's no money. We spent about a week going out, and then a week coming back. He had several cabins along the way. He's setting traps on the way out. When we come back, well, we had a few squirrels and blue jays. So that was my trapping experience. And so then that's when I went to work for the road commission at 20 Mile there out of. So
were there a lot of people trapping?
No. There was most old guys, they had traps out, but I wouldn't say anyone's making their living there in the Central area anyhow.
Right.
And they, because they all, most of the work for the road commission in summertime. And then there was mining there too. That they, see, I don't know how, quite what it was. Yeah, they shut down all the mines that hired help, the way I understood it. And there's a few old guys who are still pecking away at it there. Mm-hmm. But then after the war, then it started booming.
Yeah, well, during the war, the government shut down gold mines.
I think they did.
They did.
And commercially, I don't think they could hire help to do it
they,
anyhow.
Commercial mines, because it was had to do with the critical resources for the war.
Yeah, they... It just, well, I don't know. Well, of course, all the young guys were being drafted.
Right.
And you see, and they just about destroyed the Alaska population in World War I.
Yeah.
But, and then Yukon territory, they exempted guys that lived there from the draft in World War II.
Oh.
And I guess quite a few young guys went there
to
beat the draft.
Right.
I didn't know it. We were there for a very short time, and I never got acquainted with any local people.
Right.
But I was under the impression quite a few of the draft dodgers went there. Hmm. But Alaska wasn't a haven for draft dodgers.
Now, Central is pretty close to the town of Circle and the Yukon River.
No, 30 miles. I think 33 miles from there.
Did you interact with people in Circle?
How's that?
Did people in Central and people in Circle get together with each other?
Not really. I don't think there's any white people living in Circle at that time. There's a store there, and a white guy is running that. And anyhow, he's married to a native girl, and I thought he treated her real chauvinously. I guess I didn't think he treated her very nice, and I know he talked down to all the Indians there, but that's all there was there. So there wasn't much communication between the two places, because I know there's other white guys there. Yeah, because the guy there had a sawmill.
Okay.
Let's see, what's his name? Can't remember his name. He had a brother and another guy. They had a freighting business between Circle and Fairbanks.
Oh, a freighting business,
They had two trucks. Let's see, guy's name was O'Leary.
Right.
And then the other guy, Jewel. The guy had a sawmill named Jewel, and then he had a brother that was in this freighting business. And they were both married to Indian girls. And then my wife and I was up there in 89, looking at homestead land there. And they have a little museum there.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in there, and there's a woman there. I asked her if she knew Johnny Lake. Oh, yeah, she knew Johnny Lake. And then she says, do you know O'Leary? And I don't remember what his first name
was. Is it George? Was it George?
I don't know what. It's O'Leary. And then his partner was named Jewel.
Okay.
But anyhow, this woman says, well, do you know this Larry? She named it. And I said, yeah, him and his partner was married, just about a couple squaws. the Indians weren't treated nice at all in those days. And we didn't talk nice about them at all. And I said, married to a couple of sisters there. Boy, I just got on. She gave me a faint smile, and she says, I'm O'Leary's daughter. Well, I just about said to a couple of squaws, and I knew better by that time, but that's the way we talked about the Indians then. And that's funny. For once, didn't cut my nose off completely. Yeah.
Now, so did your parents homestead in Central?
No, they bought a house there. And a guy had the foreman of the road commission there at Central was the guy that built this house, it built a real nice log cabin there, had told this foreman to sell the place, and he named the price, and it's real reasonable. And then some of the local people, this foreman, he had power of attorney, so he sold the place for the guy, and paid only $700. And I know at that time it was worth at least $2,000.
Yeah.
And it's a real good buy for my folks. But I know some of the people there, they resent that. The guy came out there and wondering why they're living in the house, but they'd already paid it. This guy's holding it, the money for him.
Mm.
So he didn't have anything to stand on because he'd given the guy power of attorney. Myself, I felt kind of guilty about it, but I know my dad, he didn't feel bad about it. You know, but I know some of the people, they resented that because he did, but anyhow, they accepted it. Anyhow, are you running short of time?
No, I'm okay still. We've got a little bit more time.
Yeah. But anyhow, so then I kept hounding the draft board about getting back in the Army, so I finally got in.
So what you said, you worked at 20 Mile.
Yeah.
20 Mile Stees Highway?
Yeah, no, that's on the Richardson
Highway. Oh, 20 Mile Richardson. Oh,
yeah.
That was the Moose Creek one.
How's that?
That was where the Moose Creek, the Moose Bluff.
There's Moose Creek there.
Yeah, right.
And then there's a bluff there.
Right, right, okay.
That there's getting the rock from.
Right. Then you got fired, and so you went back to 82 Mile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I got along real good
with
that
just,
guy.
Then you stayed working there?
Until fall. Till close-up time. And in the main office, they had a whole bunch of cubby holes there with people's names, workers' names.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there, and I saw my mailbox there, and here was greetings to join the Army. Well, what they had done, the letter had been laying there for several weeks, but they left it, they didn't bring it out to camp because they knew if I got it there, I'd go home for a visit.
Oh.
So they held it there so that I wouldn't, so it'd still be in the camp.
Right.
So I didn't get to, I did get a week off earlier in the summer for a visit home because I knew I was going to get drafted. So I did get home, but by that time, Eagle Summit was snowed over, and I couldn't have got out without paying the going. So anyhow, they pulled the same thing on another guy, a half-breed Indian. And so the guys that was in our group had already gone to Fort Rich. But then, so we traveled down together, the two of us. And I knew him faintly, you know, when I'd worked at, when they had the camp at Birch Creek. But I never really got acquainted with him. But then, of course, we traveled on the train together, we got acquainted.
And what was his name?
Thurman. He was raised down near the mouth of the Koycock, and he had had seven brothers, and he was a very intelligent guy, and of course I kind of looked down on him, you know, because he's an Indian, and it didn't take me long to realize he was in a lot of things he was superior to me.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real good musician. He could play anything.
Wow.
And then, in basic training, we ended up in the same hut. And I got really well acquainted
with him. So was Thurman his last name?
What's that?
Thurman?
Thurman was his last name. Clinton Thurman. And he ended up down at Anchor River. And he had a filling station down there for years. And, you know, I was down in Homer, I didn't know he. We'd written, exchanged letters when we got out of service, and I went to Petersburg, and he went back down to his folks' homestead on the Blackburn Island, I think, was in front of their place.
Right, right.
And anyhow, we exchanged letters, and then one, his letter come back, not no longer at this address. So I wait, well, he's going to send him, when he gets a new address, he'll write to him. Never did.
Yeah.
And so I packed and forgot about him. And then my wife and I moved out of our homestead. Here comes over the, they had, at that time, they had a news they sent out to
over the radio
out in the backwoods. He says his wife and his was going to be in Anchorage a certain day, and that they'd like to meet my wife and me. So we just got out there, and see how one is breaking up. Anyhow, we couldn't have got out, and we couldn't afford it either. So we got the corresponding, and then. 2 years later, we was able to get together. Well, funny thing, first thing he said, man, you've lost a lot of weight. I had lost about 20 pounds, and I never did gain it back. I don't know what, as John is about 55 years old, just all of a sudden, I wasn't sick or nothing, but over a summer, I lost 20 pounds. But he looked, and he's always had poor posture, and wasn't very neat. But there he was, looked real sharp, you know, and he's carried himself real good, and he's all cleaned up good, and he'd married a white woman. And we had a real nice visit.
Good.
And then a couple of years later, him and his wife and my wife and we got together.
Good.
And, but then he died here several years ago.
So you left Central and went out into the military. They took you this time?
How's that?
The military took you in this time?
Yeah, they took me in, yeah. They'd already accepted me, and I'd passed the physical up in Fairbanks, and then they shipped us down. Then they sent us through physical to get in there at Fort Rich.
So you did your basic training at Fort Rich?
Rich,
and
yeah.
What year was that?
That was 44.
Oh, okay.
October of 44, I went in there. And we went through, so Sermon and I went through basic together. And, but you know, it's kind of ironic, as we had on the rifle range, they had different styles of shooting. They had in the rapid fire, I didn't get all my cartridges shot. I had three rounds left. And so, as Sergeant says, well, go ahead and shoot anyhow. So I did. Well, I made expert. And Thurman, he didn't quite make expert.
Uh-oh.
And after 50 years, he remembered that. And I didn't blame him a bit.
No.
Well, in my record, I was an expert rifleman, and he was just a sharpshooter.
Right.
And I've shot with him a lot, and I don't think there's a dime's difference in us our shooting.
Well, he probably grew up subsistence hunting. He probably grew up hunting moose and things.
Oh, yeah.
And so he knew how to shoot.
He wrote a book.
Oh.
He wrote a book and sent it to me, and I've loaned it to someone, and it hasn't come back. But he had a book.
Hmm.
He wrote this book, and he sent it. He said he had 50 of them made up, and he sent them to friends.
Nice.
So I don't know. Someone out in Highland Lake, there had been several people there, but I don't know. No one seems to know where it is.
Hmm. But he sure knew how to shoot.
How's that?
He grew up hunting.
Oh, yeah.
So he knew how to shoot.
Oh, he knew how to shoot. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And so, and of course, I'd been doing a lot of target practice with that foreman that year, too. But, he's really a great guy, though. I say a real smart guy.
Yeah.
And, anyhow, we got through basic training. We were sent to a headquarters company in Fort Rich. And the first night there, or first evening, day anyhow, the first sergeant there gave us a talk. And he was real nasty talking. I didn't like him right off the bat. He said, if you don't behave yourselves, we'll ship you to ADAC. And so I put up my hand and said, yeah. I says, can we volunteer to go to ADAC? And he said, well, we'll see if we can arrange it. And he says, and then he just said, well, anyone else want to go? And Thurman, he put up his hand, and four other guys did. And they left us going, send six of us there. So they were all volunteers.
Wow.
And I never did see that first sergeant again, but I didn't like, I think the other guys the same way, but yeah, so four, they didn't have to draft any of us, all six of us volunteered to go. So anyhow, so Thurman and I, we went in a motor pool out there.
Oh.
I don't know, and then, and then one of them, he ended up in the orderly room. He knew how to type.
Oh.
And he was from Ketchikan. He's Norwegian ancestry. He was a nice guy. But then other guys, I don't really remember what they did. I know one ended up being a steady KP.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, a good one on basic training. They called out, one morning they called out eight of us. And then said, we're sending you down to see, they're building up a class there at the, called the receiving section. And then in the end of the month, they're going to send us down to the training camp. Well, they says, you guys are the most advanced here. We'll send you down to special training. Oh, we were excited. We thought we were going to be commandos or something like that, you know. Got down there. Our special training was KP.
Oh, no.
A steady week of KP. So we were kitchen commandos.
Well, you finally learned. Did you finally learn how to cook?
No, that KP, I washed trays all day long.
Oh, my.
And then the mess hall, they had a rack there of trays for guys to pick up the tray and go past the counter there with a dish out of food. Well, they're greasy. The trays were greasy. They shined with grease. Yeah. And I thought, well, I was washing dishes. I thought, they aren't going to be greasy like that. They're going to be shiny. So I made sure that one pot with the soapy water, and then another rinse water. I had that rinse water so hot that I couldn't put my hands in it. I just dipped the trays in it and put it over there, and I got done the first meal. Got done, and the sergeant come in there and said, Sergeant, you did a good job. I want to show you something. So he took it out where they showed where these trays were in the mess hall, and there's only two-thirds of them being used. Here, mine were shiny there, and the rest of them were greasy. You did such a good job, I'll let you wash the rest of them. No compliment. Well, that was his compliment, you
right.
know. Well, you did such a nice job, you can do the rest.
Right.
Of course, when they said when you can, that meant you do it.
That's right.
And anyhow, so I spent a whole week there with my hands in hot water and steam. Some of the guys, they were peeling potatoes all the time. I think, actually, my job was, it was nastier, but time went fast.
Yeah.
And I can imagine peeling potatoes all day long was pretty tiresome.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that was our special training. I can laugh at it now, but then I wasn't too happy about
No.
Yeah, that, but anyhow, that's...
So you did go out to ADAC?
Yeah, the next day we were on ADAC. They was all ready to take us. Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Then I did miss trees out there, though. I'd have dreams. That was back in the mountains, and kind of across a valley of trees. ADAC wasn't bad, though. We had better duty there than we would have at Fort Rich.
No.
We moved in nice barracks, and most of the people on the island was living in concert huts and tents. I know one regiment of infantry, they were living in tents. And so we had it real good. They're driving, just like driving cab, what we was doing, hauling officers and office workers around.
Oh, so that motor pool, you got to just drive people around?
That's the reason the motor pool, they had mechanics and stuff there, but we were drivers, about six of us, there's drivers. That's okay. And certainly he liked that job. He liked driving. He liked anything you could drive. He liked that thing. And I didn't like it because you have all these officers behind your back, you know, and yes, sir, no, sir, you know, and stuff. And I always resented that.
Yeah.
And one day, this, you know, on Sundays, they just have one driver and then alternate driver. Well, this one Sunday, having lunch, someone comes from earlier, well, file, we're going to have you driving all day, says that some lieutenants here wants a driver all afternoon, and rather than have the other, the regular driver tied up that long, we'll have you drive. Well, a nice sunny day and a nice ski hill behind the camp, and I figured on it'd be skiing there, and they'd call me anytime they wanted to. No, I drove a couple of these punk lieutenants up a hill, and they skied down. I'd haul them up the hill, and they skied down. And they were no older than me, you know. And of course, I had to serve them every time they demanded something of me. Boy, I just about was ready to quit if I could have.
But it was the Army. You couldn't quit.
No, I couldn't quit. No, that was I really resented that. And there's a nice young couple I got acquainted with here. They come here every Sunday night. And he's going into the Air Force. So I told him, treat enlisted people nice, because he's going in as a, I guess, a lieutenant the bat, even for his training. So he said, well, I don't think he would treat people like, he might unconscious, not knowing. Right. And those punks, they thought that was their right, you know, that they could have an enlisted man working for them all afternoon for, they didn't give me a tip or anything like
that. No, of course not.
And that was their privilege. I still get kind of hot color. I think of those punks treating me like that.
Yeah.
And of course, they didn't know any better. They thought that's their privilege.
Well, that's how the Army worked back then.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It kind of still does, probably. Yeah.
Well, you know, like my son, he went to the Army in Fort Rich when he's 17. I didn't want, we had to sign for him, but I figured better sign him, let him go in because he's restless and didn't want to stay home anyhow. So he went in the Army, and then while he's there, they had a minor Olympics or something like that. He entered in everything they had, and he never won anything, but he come close to winning. And anyhow, his major come over and wanted to meet Vial's dad. he comes close to the top everyone. Mm-hmm. And they had, the Rangers had athletes there too.
Oh.
And they always wondered what kind of outfit he's in. He's in the artillery.
Oh.
Because they thought he would have fitted in with the Rangers. And he would have, but he was in the artillery.
So I didn't realize that out in ADAC, you'd go downhill skiing? There was a mountain for
just
skiing?
Just the mountains and a lot of grass. There's a lot of grass. Some of the grass is 6 foot tall.
But there was enough snow to ski?
They had a lot of snow there. Up to about 300 feet, usually snow would melt off. But then above that, there was all the snow you wanted.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So that's what guys did for fun?
Some did. I don't know what some did for fun. Some would, well, they played cards, and they had Mount Moffat there. It's 3,996 feet high. And I climbed that, and I got some interesting stories about that. But anyhow, I could never get any of my buddies to go up there with me. They'd get about halfway up the mountain, and they'd decide they had enough of it. But sometimes I'd climb up there after supper, and the guys thought I was crazy, but I did it to keep from going crazy.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that's I had good service out there, really, though, other than those punks having me drive up.
Right. Now, were you there? Was there any bombing going on when you were there?
No, the war was ended while I was still stationed out there. But, yeah, that was fun.
So how long were you there?
About a year. But I got a break-in. They had a track meet there, and I won the mile. So I was able to go to Ladd Field. Was up there. I don't know what to call it now. It used to be Ladd Field.
Oh, Ladd Field is now called Fort Wainwright.
Yeah. But anyhow, they went there for a meeting, but I didn't win up there.
So they did running races?
Yeah. I ran the mile, and they had the mile, and then they had the shorter runs, and they had shot put and javelin throw and stuff like that. Kind of was a minor Olympics,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And but the when they was getting us together before we left ADAC, of course all those other guys had run, they had competed in high school and college, you know. So and then they. Our coach to be found out hadn't even gone to high school. Well, I can see you're no use to us. And he tried not taking me, but they had to take me. So he didn't want to take me because I didn't have any background. And so they sent the guy to come in second. Well, when I was getting ready for the race at Ladd Field, I mentioned something about my mouth being dry. He said, oh, chew orange peels. Well, I chewed orange peels, and I swallowed some of it. So when I got about about halfway through the race, I started vomiting. So I quit. I couldn't run and vomit too. So the guy that has come out second after me on ADAC, he come in second at Ladd Field. So let's see that coach though. He proved that I wasn't. They shouldn't have taken me, you know.
You're right.
I think he sabotaged me.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, yeah.
Because I would never advise anyone to chew orange peels before they're going into any kind of competition.
Yeah.
And so I think he sabotaged me. He didn't like me. Just some reason or another. Well, they didn't call us dropouts in those days. About half the kids who went through eighth grade and me back in the farming country, they quit school then and went to work on the farms.
Right.
There was no prejudice against us or anything. And of course, nowadays, they're a dropout.
Right. So you never did go to high school?
No, I never did.
Yeah.
Or later on, I was working in a logging camp down in Nia Bay, and it was closing down. The guy says, well, why aren't you using your veterans schooling. And they said, why don't you do it? So I went east of the mountains to Cleellum and enrolled there in high school. And they said, well, that was just before Christmas. They said, well, come back after New Year's. And so I started out as a freshman there. Well, they kept me in, what do they call it, the hall where they have big gatherings.
Like a study hall or
assembly hall or something.
Yeah.
They gave me a desk there next to the window, and the teachers just flocked to me to help me out, you know, because all they had said is, see that young guy out there? I was 26 then. He values an education. Well, I was just killing time so I'd go skiing. It's no wrong with that. But I did get into it. I thought, I was a real poor student when I was in grade school, and that I got into it, and I studied hard, and I was making A's all the time, nearly all the time.
Right.
So then in April, though, I was staying there in a motel, and I woke up one night in this railroad station right close by, and I hear those diesel engines chugging back and forth. I thought it was back in Petersburg, and I got up and went, I was just homesick. So I quit school, and they gave me a whole bunch of tests and stuff, I passed freshman year in about 2.5 months. But anyhow, these kids don't study half as hard as they do, because I was a real poor student in grade school, and I just sailed through that stuff.
So
then, of course, they'd all talk me going to college and stuff like that. So I can't think of anything that requires a college education that I want to do. So I that was the end of my education.
So did you ever get a high school degree, a diploma? No.
No. I took a test, but then they had supposed that was for high school. I took a test for high school.
Right.
Now they have this GED,
right,
I think.
Right.
But they had something different then. And I know I had to go, and as coming home, and I was supposed to go to a place in Seattle and take a test. And they told me I'd passed it, and they send my diploma to Petersburg School. Well, I didn't think of any importance at all. So when I got to Petersburg, I never even bothered to go out and see if they'd gotten it. So I never did get, but they said I qualified for a diploma.
No.
And my boys, my brothers, some of them didn't have. My brother Bob, he only had a sixth grade education. And when he went to the Army, he took a GID.
Yeah, or GED.
GED. And of course, my brother Tom, he went to Fairbanks School in his freshman year, I think. And see, there's something of that. My brother Tom, real handsome, dark handsome. And he studied. He went to school. And the girls, he wasn't having anything to do with the girls, you know. They called him Smooth File. Well, the next year, of course, he went in the Army. And then my brother Fred, he was blonde. And it's kind of tossed between them whether he's the best looking of the whole gang, you know. He went to Fairbanks. They started calling him Smooth File Sam. Boy, he just gobbled it up. And he ended up going to college. So he went in the Marines, and then he went to college after he was in the Marines, and he had a degree in engineering, and then before he died, he's head of some engineering organization down south. But both of them were real good. Well, I don't know how good Fred was when he's called Smooth File, but but he's hung in there and got a college education. It was just like when I was in grade school, that when the sun starts shining longer hours, I was ready to hit the trail.
Right. Yep. Sounds like, you like being outdoors.
Let's see my clock. It's just, I think it's, I can't see it. It's 20 after 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was going to say this might be a good place to take a break for today.
Okay. And you're going back to.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's, well.
So for today, we will stop.